presents and I'll be glad. But the last time I played Father Christmas, I stood outside his department store. A gang of kids came over and mugged me, and that my ring is to the floor. Said, Father Christmas, give us the money. Don't mess around with those silly toys. On a cheap store, I'm an awfully money. We only want the real McCoy. Father Christmas, give us the money. We'll beat you up if you make us annoyed. Father Christmas, give us the money. Don't mess around with those silly toys. But give my daddy a job, cause he needs one. He's got lots of mouths to feed. Remember the kids who got nothing while you're drinking down your wine. Father Christmas, give us some money. We got no time for your silly toys. Father Christmas, please hand it over. We'll beat you up so don't make it some noise. Father Christmas, give us some money.
It's in 18 seconds after the hour of 11, and it's the month of December in the year of our Lord, 2006, and so forth. It is Wednesday. Welcome to Day 12. It is the Rick Emerson Show, live from the plushly appointed in Germfield Studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio. Thank you for coming by and making it part of your listening day. We're live here from the Coin Tower in beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon. Thank you for being there. It's 503-7, or as Michael Reagan used to say, is he even still on the air? Does Michael Reagan even have a radio program anymore?
Oh, you know, there are barrels full of these no-name talk show hosts everywhere.
That is true.
I mean, they nationally syndicate anyone these days.
Don't I know it? Michael Reagan's another one of those guys. He's like another one of those mush-mouth clowns from the for the Cleveland mush-mouth clown for the Cleveland Clinic. One of those
is
guys.
Is he a rock and roll Republican?
Yes, he is. Him and Laura Ingraham. And you can tell because she wears a spangled shirt, like a bejeweled shirt that says Hot Mom on the front.
Oh.
Ooh, sexy. No, because Michael Reagan's another one of those guys. Michael Reagan was a talk show host that people listened to for about 6 months back in 1984, for those of you that don't know. He's another one of those mush-mouth guys that he never knew when to swallow. His mouth was always full of spit. He was always talking, Michael Reagan. He had that kind of Alfred Hitchcock thing. Alfred Hitchcock was the same way. Loads of excess saliva in that guy's head. Or in his gob, as the British would say. But Michael Reagan would come on and he's... Michael Reagan here. You, of course, are there. That's what passed for wit on the Michael Reagan show. That was his introduction every night. Michael Reagan here. You are there. And then he would go on and on and on about his dad. Anywho, it's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2. And then I swear to God, in his book, have you read Michael Reagan? Of course not. No one has. Only me.
What does he have to say?
Michael, I don't even want to talk about it. It will make me sound callous.
Please sound callous.
No, I don't know. I should stop now.
Would it make a great stocking stuffer?
No, it would not. No, I don't wish to sound cruel. I won't go on about it. It's 503-733-2970. The Rick Emerson Show cares. If you want to engage with us electronically, my friends, mi compadres, you can do that as well. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Rick@rickemerson.com for your comments, your questions, your clarifications, your kvetching, your what have you. That's how you can do it. We played the Kinks there. I was going to start with the...
Why, Aaron? Why do you do these things?
That's not it either. You know what I found finally is the...
Where can we start?
I finally got the whole thing yesterday.
I like the ones with the pretty eyes.
Well, I like...
Yeah, we're not going to play this one.
What happened?
All right, I have to do... Well, we'll play the whole thing later. And by whole thing, I mean about 60 seconds of it, because there's no way... Because like all rap from that era, once you hit the chorus, it never goes anywhere else. But I found I have in my hands, and I'm speaking figuratively because I don't know where it is. I've lost it. Ah, here we go. This is courtesy of Jeremy, the CBS Radio Engineering Department. I have not only Bunny and Tigra with Cars That Go Boom, because I don't even remember how we got on the subject. How is it that we got on the subject of Cars That Go Boom by Bunny and Tigra?
Songs that sound like other songs, I think.
Maybe.
The Fergalicious.
Yeah, but why were we even talking about Fergalicious?
Why are we talking about anything?
Who knows? Really, that's true. Why was I just talking about Michael Reagan and his mouth full of spit? No one knows.
No one knows.
It's lost to the sands of time. Well, I'll get to that here in a second. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email if it suits your fancy or whatever that word is. Whatever that phrase accurately is. It's rick@rickemerson.com. First on my list of things that we're going to tease today is, will the phones work? Let's find out right now, shall we?
Hold me. Like you did by the lake on the boo.
Our good friend Aaron Geek in the city, Duran. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Hey, and there... Now, is that your phone or is that our phone?
That's your phone.
Okay. Let's make... Apparently,
well, they work better than yesterday.
Yeah.
The bar is set so low. I don't mean to knock the engineers, but really, it takes so little to make us happy. Every day that we don't come in here and there's, like, smoke billowing out of one of the consoles, that's one in the win column for us.
We have good engineers, though. They're standing by.
No, it's true. Standing in the hallway staring at us. As the... this is apparently what's... Now, I don't know if Aaron can actually hear this, but this is what is called a harmonic effect, apparently. And it's where... someone speaks, someone says something, and then there's like a weird, watery, underwater sound, like an underwater kind of echo that happens immediately afterward. And it can be difficult to tell because sometimes it can be the phone, and this is less of a problem now. But I remember back in like the mid-90s, there were these weird digital cell phones, and when the digital transmission of that signal first started coming out in the mid-90s, those phones sounded awful. They sounded terrible. You would take a phone call from somebody, and Likas used to bitch about this constantly, and people were talking about it in the background for no readily apparent reason. So apparently it only happens when we pick up certain lines. So I think it's happening on lines like 1 and 3, but like not on lines 4 and 6. It doesn't make any sense. Well, in any event, how's life in the in Geek Central, my friend?
Life is good. I'm filled with Milwaukee meat.
Life is good and filled with
Milwaukee meat?
Yeah.
Pleased to be explaining.
Apparently, my company has this yearly tradition where every year around this time,
yes,
they just send out pounds and pounds and pounds of various meat products.
Are you in Milwaukee?
No, I'm in downtown, but the company is headed in Milwaukee.
Please tell me it's Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Yes.
Okay, thank God. Because for a minute there, I had this horrific image of just that meat van that goes door to door, like rolling out of you know, Tonya Harding's neighborhood and coming by your office. Who wants a big bag full of meat for the holidays?
It could be. I mean, they might be lying about the label.
Yes, it's entirely possible. And if the meat comes from Milwaukee, Oregon, you never really know. You don't really know the lineage. You don't really know from whence it derives. All right. Here's what we
are. Lamb and wash up meat.
Here's what we're going to get to today. What am I at push-up? Was it three?
Ooh, you are at three.
Three, fantastic. Today we answer the magical question of, will the phones work? And if so, for how long? That's a question still in the answering stage. I was all set, by the way, to bring on, what's his name? Richard blah, blah, blah from CNN. What's his name? Richard something or other? Richard Ridden?
Richard Wybrow.
Wybrow. I was about to bring on the CNN guest booker to demand that he explain on the air in front of the people, God, and everyone why they were denying us access to Brian Blank, who is the new... And Brian Blank is not some sort of a kooky radio name, to the best of my knowledge, although it could be.
I'm sure that it is.
It is? No, why would you pick... I mean, I guess it does get attention. Brian Blank. Brian...
I'm kind of excited to get this new mix into the CNN...
God, what if
pool.
He's just terrible? What if we bring him on and he just sucks after all of his build-up? Well, what are you going to do? Brian Blank would be a great alternative radio name. If you worked at, like KROQ...
Or Brian O'Blank.
Yeah, Brian Blankenstein. Anyway, so I was all ready to bring on Richard Wybrow from CNN, who's the guest booker there. Wait, speaking of which, when is the last time anybody talked to Laura Caviezel?
She's working mornings this week.
Oh, I see. So she's not gone. I mean, not that we would want her to be gone, because she's one of our colleagues. And every day that we get to talk to Laura Caviezel at CNN is a day that our lungs are full of crisps. Sparkling
Richard is so
air.
Much more interesting to talk to. I mean, he does things like he's going to be on the Travel Channel. He went traveling all around the world with his family, and he has all this other stuff going on besides talking about weddings and all that crap.
He's sort of the Rick Steves of the CNN family.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, in any event, so we called up today, and I was just raring to be to say, like, we're going to get that Rick guy from CNN on. He's going to get Richard on, and he's going to come and he's going to explain to us why we can't have Brian Blank. But apparently, he preemptively said, and Brian Blank is available. So we will be talking for the first time ever to CNN Radio Corps. Bob Costantini will no longer be the last guy picked for software. Now, if Bob Costantini will now be a veteran, relatively speaking, because Brian Blank from CNN will be joining us from New York City to talk about, among other things, stories affecting the CBS family of radio stations. What else? We have Tigra and Bunny, and then on this CD dropped off by Jeremy from Engineering, there are three cuts on here. There's Fergie's Fergalicious, which I have to admit that I don't even really know all that much, because, like, where would I ever hear that? I mean, I'm imagining that's the thing. Who would even be playing that at this point? I guess Z100, maybe. And Jammin', probably, I guess.
I don't listen to those stations.
I don't either. I'm only guessing from their television ads and billboards. From judging by their billboards, they're apparently very... they're exciting stations with the youth. In any event, there was this debate yesterday about this Fergie song and whether it was taken from Cars That Go Boom by Tigra and Bunny, or whether it was taken from J.J. Fad's Supersonic, or both. So on this CD is both the Fergie song and J.J. Fad. J.J. Fad, who I will always remember, because they used to have... This is a thing that Sarah missed out on. Sarah, and I know there's been a recurring theme this week, because we've had so many things that were sort of... so many topics and subjects and things that have come up that were based in the 80s and the 90s. Here's a thing that you did not live through. You did not live through the first wave of 900 numbers. And advertisements for same. Like, you never sat around and watched TV and did to call the new kids on the block for $2.99 a minute at... Do you ever remember...
Yeah, there's, like, Sir Mix-a-Lot when he's, like, down 1-900-Mix-a-Lot, and my friends and I would do that at summer parties.
But that was a song, right?
It was a song.
Now, did you ever remember watching television and having a musical artist that you were a fan of coming on and say, call the Guns N' Roses hotline right now and talk to Axl?
No.
Yeah, I totally remember that. And it was, like, the biggest ripoff, because you would call, and it would just be some flack from the fan club, telling you to call another number and then buy a bunch of their crap. And there was this golden time where 900 numbers were everywhere, And you would call. There was this especially insidious one. Speaking of Christmas time, there was this especially nefarious 900 number that came out in like 1990, maybe, or 1989. And it was a number, a 900 number that the youth could use, that the young people could use to talk to Santa Claus. And the really tricky thing about it was, is it was targeted at like 5-year-olds. And they didn't even have to dial the phone. The whole thing was, they just, the commercial instructed the youth to pick up the phone and hold the phone up to the speaker of the television. And then they would play the actual dialing on the television, which, of course, would trigger the phone to call. And so you didn't even... you could have just had hooks. You didn't even need to be able to have hands. Like, you didn't even need to know what numbers were. You just held the phone up to the speaker. They would play the touch tones on the television commercial, and it would dial. And then your kid is talking to Santa for, like, $9.99 a minute. And the mom gets the phone bill that's, like, $700 and beats the child senseless with a cone hanger. So
I remember that. I had a neighbor who did that.
It just ended all kinds of badly. And, like, I can't even imagine, during the 90s, the total dollar amount of, like, phone sex calls that were disputed by parents because the kid clearly made them when mom and dad weren't around. And then the bill comes, and mom and dad are like, did you make a phone sex call? No. Did you make a phone sex call? Billy. And then they turn and they look at the kid, and the kid, oh, I didn't make any phone. And then he just runs away and hides in the bathroom with a copy of Reader's Digest. And then mom and dad have to call the phone company and insist straight-facedly that, like, the dog somehow knocks the receiver off and pressed 1-900-ASK-FOR-ASS or something, and then it was on the ass line for 2.5 hours. I know this because I was that kid. Not in my own home, mind you. Not in my own home. But in the early days of phone sex lines, I did actually call some. This is probably more than you want to know.
This is more than anybody wants to know.
I did. No,
please,
no.
Please not finish.
No, no, no. And if it makes you feel
this
better.
This is a charming tale for the holidays, isn't it?
No, this is part of the joy of XXXmas. As the DJs would say.
As every porn star says.
No, as anybody wants to visualize.
No, if it makes you feel better, like, I never actually engaged in any activity. Because here's what would happen. This is a true story. No, this is a heartwarming holiday tale.
I bet it is.
I remember when my grandparents moved from one house to another.
Left their phone.
They left the phone connected, and there were many many trips, many loads of items being taken from the old house to the new house.
You're dialing sex numbers as your grandparents are moving.
Yes.
Well, they're taking a break between
totally
loads
and so
moving boxes. I didn't even mean for it to come out that way.
Zing. Anywho, so there's my mom and my dad, I guess, we're still around at that point, and my grandparents. And they're all at my grandparents' house, and I'm seeing this phone that's, like, plugged into the corner, and I'm, like, 13. And there's a phone plugged into the wall, and they're like, we're going to take this load of, whatever, detergent and clothes from the basement over to the new house. Do you want to come?
No, I'm going to stay here and, pray. Talk to Jesus.
Okay. Well, we'll come back.
All right.
And then sooner they're out of the house, lock every door, draw every curtain, and then I go right to the phone. I'm like, yeah. And then in those days, you could probably now, actually, you just any crude combination of words, any combination of slang or euphemism for a bodily act or function, you could dial 1-900 and then that, and it would connect you to a phone sex line. It's sort of like it is with URLs now. You could just type in, like, meatshop.com, and it takes you to some porn site. Then you could, like, 1-900, ask for ass, or whatever it was. And I'm recalling, and there's a... And then, probably as now, you get the breathy-voiced ingenue who comes, you've reached, like, ass-onia. If you accept it, I'm not doing a very good job of sounding like a woman.
I did.
But it's a whole lot of... And then they had this thing that was legally mandated. They had this thing that was mandated by law. They go, billing will begin in 3 seconds, baby. if you want to talk to one of our live sexy girls, like, just hang on for 3 seconds. And that was, like, to give you the window of time to hang up if you had been trying to call, like, like Mutual of Omaha, like insurance agencies or something. And so, of course, I wait the 3 seconds. Oh, this is going to be the best thing ever. And then, of course, what happens every time? The girl picks up. Hi, baby. This is Cinnamon. What's your name?
Me.
I gotta go. Wham! Hang up the phone. And of course, I did that 8, 9, 10, 12 times a day. But what I didn't realize
was it a different girl every? Was it Cinnamon every time?
No. Sometimes it was Jasmine. Sometimes it was Trixie.
Oregano.
Sometimes it was Babs. But what I did not realize, but what I found out is, once you hit that three-second window on the phone sex line where they begin charging you, they charge you for the first minute, even if you hang up 2 seconds into it. So they're like, hang up in 3 seconds if you don't want to be billed. Me. You know, and they're still there. Hi, this is Juniper. What's your, you know, hang up. But, of course, they've already billed me for $3.99 for that minute. You do that like 5, 10, 8, 9, 10 times. I mean, that's like $80. Mm. And so, of course, then the phone bill comes. You know, and there's my grandparents, as I imagine them having the conversation. So, were you calling the ass line? You know, no, I wasn't. I don't, you know. And then, of course, the speculation invariably falls to me. And I somehow managed to convince them, I think, that, I somehow managed to convince them that, like, they had left the door open after they moved, and, like, burglars had, like, hooligans had come in and called the ass line in their stead. I don't think they really believe me. My point of all this is that I remember J.J. Fadd having one of those 900 numbers. And I will always remember that it said that the opening line, it was the J.J. Fadd guys, like, the girls and J.J. Fadd, like, around a phone saying, we're J.J. Fadd, and we're here to talk. Pick up the phone. We're here around the clock. Which is what passed for mad rhyme skills in those days. That was a long story to get to the fact that I have this J.J. Fadd song on CD.
Wow. Man.
That was like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
We'll never get that back. Ever.
20 minutes closer to death.
I think it was kind of interesting.
It was.
Do you even know what he talked about? I don't even remember what he talked about. Do you remember what he talked about?
He was talking about calling the ass line from his grandma's phone while they were moving.
Every young man has called the ass line here and then.
If you're not going to do it from your grandmother's house, where are you going to do it? Really?
I did it from school.
Really?
This was before they caught on and they began to block 900 numbers.
Uh-huh.
I called 1-900 wet love.
Oh, gross.
Got the operator, put it on hold, and walked away.
Yeah.
That was the best.
Yeah, you know they got like a $1,200 bill later, too.
Yeah, that's right.
Fantastic.
Need attention, will you?
Wet love, like in a swimming pool.
Yeah.
Like Kyle MacLachlan and Elizabeth Berkley.
Oh, that was beautiful.
That was wet love.
Anywho.
Can't call moist love, it's too big.
Anywho. We will answer the magical question, what part of your body don't you want stapled? Also, where don't you want a meat hook put?
Probably the same place.
Yeah, well, that is possible, I suppose. Where don't you want a meat hook put?
Okay.
What?
Well, we didn't understand
the
first time.
Meat hook put.
It wasn't any complete
word. Does it sound like I'm speaking Cambodian?
Wait, it was like kind of
meat
a
hook put.
Speech.
You're a little slurry.
You eat for hung. The
900 Kennewa cuties.
There are no Kennewa cuties. There's just one. All right, and there you go. That's what we got, my friend.
All right, then.
Well, all right, thank you. And we will
look forward to your meat hook.
We'll have speaks with you at the end of the, or with Chris at the end of the program.
Absolutely.
Thank you. There you go. That's Aaron. He can send you around. Sarah Dillon,
lunch hour.
How you doing, Sarah?
Did you see the size of that banana that I have? This is the biggest banana.
Well, you're not done with that banana yet.
I know. I've been eating this for like 15 minutes.
You should have taken a photo of it before.
They have more downstairs.
I have to say that it is the biggest, firmest, pointiest, straightest banana I've ever seen in my life.
So wrong.
It really is absurdly phallic. And I'm not trying to be, you know it's true. I'm not trying to be unnecessarily blue here. It is an absurdly phallic banana. Less so now because you've eaten most of it. But it really is like... It's the sort of banana that you would see in, like, a kooky, like a David Lee Roth video in 1985.
Yeah, I felt uncomfortable carrying it around.
Well,
yeah.
For some people, that's a selling point.
Who? What people?
People who desire a banana of that size.
Does anyone come to mind?
No, not really. I'm just talking about the general public who may be walking by the store window.
Well, because sometimes, like, if you get a small banana, it's just not enough banana. Mm. I feel like this one got enough banana.
Okay. Because there were some people who indicated interest in your banana.
And, you know, I know.
And you know, that means something. Where there's smoke, there's fire.
Oh.
It's true. And a stitch in time saves nine. Tim Riley's working.
Notice we just let you walk into that. Let you get yourself out of it.
Following stories for your edification.
Well. I don't have any banana stories.
You know what? I think Rick needs to get laid.
That was sad.
All of the stories of our been about phallic bananas and 900 numbers.
It is, the banana is insanely phallic. You have to. You knew
it
that.
It just looked like a banana to me.
That's
Rick
not true. Here's how you know it's not true. Now, I hate to get
he's
back on this.
He's just stuck in the memory of his pre-teenage years.
Now, listen to this now. When I was over the river and through the woods, when I was back by the water cooler around which we gather to discuss interesting things. Where is the water cooler that we may gather around it and discuss exciting
There's
issues?
There's nobody in the building to discuss anything with.
So I was back there kind of writing up some stuff, and Sarah just walks back here. This is what she does this morning. Before the bananas even peeled, she walks back, kind of taps me on the shoulder, says my name or whatever, and I look, and she just holds the banana up in front of my face as though it was like the sword of Excalibur.
You didn't even have to do anything vulgar with the like, you didn't have to make any, like, weird things with it. Just look at the banana.
She just holds up the banana and says, and just kind of arches an eyebrow and holds up the banana, and I just burst it, and then she walks away. You clearly knew it was a phallic-looking banana.
I said it was the
just
biggest banana ever.
Just because you've eaten the evidence. Like in that Roald Dahl story. Just because you've eaten the evidence doesn't mean I don't remember.
We have to take a picture of this and put it on your website. I'll go buy another one.
It's already in your stomach.
Buy another one.
All right. Are they all that phallic?
Yes. There's a whole bunch of them downstairs. I was tempted to buy the whole bunch. Pass them out.
The phone sex story was just, you know, it's relatable. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, we're going to warn you ahead of time. The commute from hell is coming as freezing rain is about to hit the metro area this afternoon.
Yeah, it is raining ice right now, according to Kristen Bowie.
It's raining ice.
It's raining ice. Hallelujah. I'd like to note now, because time has passed, that we did not play It's Raining Men when the guy jumped off the Paramount.
I drove by the Paramount yesterday, and that window's all fixed up, and there's somebody in there.
Ready to go for the now.
Nobody
well.
Knows.
Anywho.
Rosie O'Donnell is upset over the cost of the missing climbers on Mount Hood and questions who should pay for this. The president says, we're not winning or losing in Iraq. A baby is sent through an X-ray machine at LAX.
Oh.
And did Britney cheat on K-Fed before he became FedEx?
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, 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 dun. All right, there you go. So we got that. Lisa Goddard will, and I will try to avoid it as chew any phone sex conversation while...
No, you know you're going to bring it up. It's going to be amusing.
No. See, that's a thing that women will never understand, though, because it's a thing that doesn't appeal to women. So women have that's but it is relatable to every guy in the audience that is like my age or older. They all see because it's all been supplanted by the internet now. But anyway,
well, it's vanishing Americana,
just like the ice truck.
Burma shaped signs,
Burma shaped signs, and the ass line. The ass line is sort of like. That's like one of those tube lines you'd get on in Britain. Pardon me, sir. Is this the ass line? I'm, Will the ass line take me to the, I nearly killed him. Anywho. Why have I written down Elmo? Elmo?
Hit Elmo's fire? Yep.
I don't think this is Elmo. What is this word I've written down? Sarah, what is this word I've written down? Right here. That looks like Elmo, but that's not Elmo.
Etno? No, Best of Elmo.
Best? It's not Best of Elmo. I haven't written down Best of Elmo.
Oh, is that
Elmo.
A Christmas special that you might be broadcasting?
Yeah. I don't understand why I've written down Elmo. Well, apparently it was something I was going to discuss. It's too late now. We'd like to remind you, by the way, that because we suck, we're going to be playing Best Ofs next week. It causes me pain to say
we'll
that.
We'll be here.
What are you going to do? We'll be here. No, that is true. Monday and Tuesday, not so much. Monday and Tuesday, we'll do Behind the Christmas, as we always do. Tim Riley's prepared a fantastic Frank Sinatra Christmas special.
Yes.
That we'll be playing.
It'll be wonderful.
Now, are you narrating that? Do you narrate it? Or
I do. Okay. It's meticulously researched. As a matter of fact, back in the bad old days when we were on the air, that got like 4,000 hits
really?
Over the Christmas holiday online.
Fantastic. Yeah. So next week, next Monday, Tuesday, we'll be playing Behind the Christmas, Tim Riley's Frank Sinatra Christmas, and then, you know, just some like crap that we randomly pulled from the archives that we will call Best Ofs. And then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Sarah and I will be here, and we'll be doing the Rob Spiewak thing kind of a little bit. It's sort of hosting some of the Best Ofs. I will be around.
Oh, that sounds
we're not going to be doing a full show because Tim is going to be gone, and then Scotty's going to be drifting in and out, and it's all chaos. So next week will be Best Ofs, but we'll be here for a lot of it, sort of holding your hand and anchoring the whole thing. I'm just going to note real quickly what I didn't do last night, which is to see Rocky, and I had a chance.
Oh,
I had,
yeah.
Well, see, the thing is, I had an invite to see a secret midnight screening of it.
Oh, where was it?
At the Underground. I can't reveal where. The person doesn't want it revealed where. But it's the same place that I see a lot of. There's some. Did you go to the Sky Captain of the World of Tomorrow secret midnight showing?
I didn't go to the secret one, no. I went to the semi-public one.
Okay, yeah. There's an underground geek cave located in Portland where I've seen a couple. I saw the Sky Captain one. I saw the cave or whatever the hell that was. And then I saw, and then I got invited to the secret midnight showing last night of Rocky Balboa. I was not able to go, though.
See, I live in the suburbs. Everyone's sleeping by 11.
They're already under sugar plum vision.
Yes.
So I did not see Rocky Balboa last night, but I'm going to try to see that tonight because it is opening night. So I will be attempting to see Rocky Balboa tonight, and we can discuss it tomorrow and so forth. Are we done with this?
Oh, Jesus my God.
Strike. It's 32 all after. Right.
No, it's 30.
It was all because of this.
Yeah, we got to go now.
The Kennewick telephone story.
It's all because of the ass line. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. 503-73. You know, this is, again, we're falling down on the Christmas music. Debbie, can you throw it over to me here?
Christmas in Las Vegas. Decorate your tree with chips. Let's roll a yo beneath the mistletoe while that angel strips. Rudolph sold the sled. Now he's betting on red in a casino made out of gingerbread. Christmas in Las Vegas, it's a trip. The wise men are rolling sevens. The elves are doubling down. Light a candle and pull the handle. Love that jingling sound. Every showgirl and boy riding a sleigh of joy. Pulled by eight tiny tigers eating Siegfried and Roy. Christmas in Las Vegas, what a town. Santa brought me two aces. I wonder if I should split. Hey, waitress, bring me a drink while I think. What would Jesus hit? The strip lights are all twinkling. There's no room at the inn. But because 'tis the season, they'll comp a suite for Mary at the Wynn. Christmas in Las Vegas, it's Bethlehem with bling. Let's hope the dealer brings four newborn kings, 'cause my baby needs a brand new pair of five golden rings. Christmas in Las Vegas really swings. Cha-cha-cha-ching. I said Christmas.
Yo.
You said it, Santa. Merry Christmas, everybody. Thank you. Good night.
Fantastic. Excellent. There you go.
I love him.
Silent Night Club is the name of that CD, Richard Cheese. You know,
Cheese Ball.
And I can't believe that guy has... here's the thing about that. It's amazing that no one has written a Vegas Christmas song yet. So that guy totally spotted that. Man, he can play the rest of his life just on that one song.
Do you think he'll ever come through town again?
Probably. He's he was talking about retiring, but that was like years ago, and I think he's put out like
that
three records.
That guy? I don't think so. No way.
As long as there are slutty women on the road, Richard Cheese will stay on tour. But that guy, and he has a standing gig, I think it's at Sunset Station in Vegas, but I think that is, I mean, there's been like Christmas songs by Frank Sinatra and so forth, but I think that's the first song ever written about Christmas in Vegas, which is great because what he's doing right there, it's like when Vitamin C had that song, that graduation day song or whatever the hell that was, and Alice Cooper wrote Schools Out. You write a song like, or when the Beatles wrote Birthday, you are guaranteed gigs and royalties like once a year at least for the rest of your life. You'll never ever need to get a real job. That's the key. The key is to find a holiday or a yearly event that has not had a song written about it and write a song about that holiday.
Like Adam Sandler with his Thanksgiving song.
Totally. And the put on your yarmulke, here comes Hanukkah thing, which we're not going to play this year because that's one of those that it went from zero to overplayed in my head in like a day. But I think that was the first. I think Adam Sandler's Hanukkah song was the first, to my knowledge, Let me hold on. Let me refer to the CBS ethnic and racial stereotype awareness book.
Fat boy, by the way, isn't going for my ample boy.
I have many friends who are Jewish. No, that's wrong. That's not what I'm supposed to say. What?
That boy isn't going for my amp, because, you know, in going with the...
Ample boy.
Yeah.
Ample lad.
With the code of ethics of CBS, I feel like fat boy might be insulting.
We should move on. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. From the Hill! CNN radio correspondent with a heart full of gingerbread and a mind full of tasty, tasty political fruitcake filling stuffing. Damn, man, I'm like 0 for 3 this week. Lisa Goddard, hello, how are you?
Oh, so close, hello.
It was all coming together there, and it just crashed on impact.
So close.
Yeah, well, what can you do? How's life on the Hill? Is anybody doing anything this week, or is it a whole lot of sitting around looking at the clock waiting for Friday?
There are a lot of people moving a lot of chairs and desks and lamps. Some people are staying, but most people moving here and there. And, you know, actually, tomorrow is a very big day. Tomorrow is the day by which I think some 3,000 people have to get out. People who have lost their jobs
work
for the Republicans and will not be returning.
Oh, yeah, that's a whole lot of we appreciate your service to our country, and please leave. That's
right, please turn in everything you have. And they have to box up all of their stuff, and if they are staying, the box goes in one place. If they're leaving, the box goes somewhere else.
That's so sad. I mean, and if there's two different trucks, there's a truck for those who are moving, and there's a truck for those who are getting the hell out.
Right, it's a bit sad.
We don't even like to decorate our studio here, and sort of, as we've been here for almost a year, we've been in the studio now, and there's a few things that are up on the walls. But I got to tell you, the thing that will seal your fate is that as soon as you hang something, as soon as you put up a picture, as soon as you put a throw rug down, that's when the unemployment gods are going to come down, and the you will be smited by the hand of karma. So, in any event, there's a whole exodus happening there. But today, now maybe I'm wrong about this, but it seems like today, this is the first time that the words "we are not winning" have ever come out of the mouth of George W. Bush. Is that right?
Yes. Yesterday, supposedly, was the first day when he said them to the Washington Post.
And is this a thing he's saying? How do I put this without sounding cynical, which is always doubly hard for me? Is this a thing he's saying because it's true, or is the... what I mean is, because we've talked so much about the way forward being the new catchphrase, but it does seem like we are not winning, but we are not losing. Is another phrase that I never heard until last week, and now I've heard it like 100 times.
Right. Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Peter Pace is the one who's credited with first saying this, and it was technically supposed to be at an off-the-record briefing, but he was quoted, actually, by people within the Bush administration, and so once that happened, everyone sort of said, well, if they can quote him, we should be able to quote him as well. And he was otherwise, I think, referred to as an administration official or something like that. But since he said it after that, then, of course, we talked about this. Now Defense Secretary Gates was asked in his confirmation hearing, are we winning the war in Iraq? And he just said no. Now, this whole statement with Bush, the Washington Post has a big headline in its top right corner that, you know, Bush says we are not winning for the first time. But the trick is what the president said to the Washington Post was, I was very interested in the statement of General Peter Pace when he said, we are not winning, we are not losing. So the president himself didn't technically say that as though it were his own thought. He said, I'm interested in the fact that someone else said it. Ugh, it's a typical Washington way of saying something without saying it at all. But that's sort of the spin from the White House today.
Would this White House, and again, just in your estimation as to how they handle things and how they address issues, would this White House ever admit that they were wrong or incorrect about anything?
I think it's possible, yeah. You know, and I think that they've admitted that there have been mistakes in Iraq, and they've admitted that things have not gone the way that they planned there. But they haven't outright said, they still defend a lot of things that many people have already moved on. For instance, the term civil war is something that's still up in the air that the Bush administration will not use, but neither will the Iraqi government. So that's a debate you can get into. I think they pick their position and they stay with it as long as they can, which sometimes is exactly what you want in a leader, but when they're not making a good decision, it can be a great fault.
And on that same subject, and I don't believe, I think sometimes I lose track of what I say out loud and what I just sort of think.
Right.
Sarah can tell tell you that leads to Annie. Earlier in this hour, that led to a sort of awkward conversation that nobody here wished to be on the receiving end of, but which they heard anyway because my inside voice suddenly became an external voice. I will not relate that conversation here, but I will say this. I don't remember whether I thought about asking you this or whether I did actually ask you this at some point in the past, but at any point during this whole sort of imbroglio that we're engaged in Iraq, at any point has someone, to our knowledge, told George W. Bush, look, you're doing blank wrong in Iraq. You got to change it and do it differently. And he has said, okay, yeah, that makes sense, fine. And he has then changed his attitude, his outlook, his direction. Has George W. Bush, to your knowledge, been corrected by anybody in his administration, been told that he is wrong about an aspect of the war in Iraq, and then altered to meet the new information?
We know that in the last few months, the Pentagon has been sending more and more signals that there are problems and that something has to change in Iraq. But we don't know exactly who has said exactly what to the president. And the upshot of that has been Donald Rumsfeld being fired. Of course, a lot of people say that probably would not have happened except for the results of the November election. So it's tricky to say what is cause and what is effect when it comes to what the change that's happening right now in Iraq, which is certainly the largest shift in policy that the president has had during his term of office. But I think it is true to say that some people have said, Mr. President, this is not working, and right now he is changing policy because of that.
Is it fair to say that this administration, that the press coverage of this administration is the most closely controlled and channeled coverage of any administration in the modern era?
Well, I don't know if, you know, that's difficult for me to say since I didn't participate as a press member, you know, in any other presidency up here in Washington anyway. I worked in other parts of the country covering campaigns, and I was a government reporter during the Clinton administration, but I wasn't here in Washington. So that's tough for me to say. What I know of the Reagan administration is that they really set the initial bar for getting what you want, especially on television, despite what the reporters want to say. And they were the ones who really got into the marketing of images and the marketing of words, those kinds of things that this administration has also done well. It's hard for me to say who has done it better. I don't know. That's tricky for me to say.
Better is a relative term. By the way, speaking of marketing and language and words and whatever, I noticed that South Dakota Senator Tim Johnson is the guy that had the brain, the bleeding, and the so forth.
Right, he's, right, the cluster.
The unpleasantness inside his head.
Yes.
His wife now has made this statement that he is, quote, and this all sounds very familiar, quote, he's continuing to move in the right direction, end quote. And I mean, is that just a whole lot of spin, or is that her saying that, do we think, or is that somebody in the DNC saying, like, you say he's moving in the right direction?
There is no doubt in my mind that when they send out statements, they're checking them with people. Every now and then we have senators that are going to visit Senator Johnson who will come out, and they'll say something that's a little bit more ad-libbed. But statements from the family, there's almost no doubt in my mind that those are going, that they want someone to look at that for them as well. Now, his son spoke to the Associated Press in the last couple of days, and that seemed to be a little less scripted, but it wasn't a very long conversation either. Yeah, I'm really concerned, as you are, although maybe this will mean more fun for you, Rick, I don't know, that we're now devolving. You know, in Russia, when I lived there, they really only have a few first names, you know, so there's a million Natashas,
sure,
tons of Borises, that kind of thing. I'm worried that now in Washington we're going to have maybe six phrases. You know, like there's six kinds of weather patterns. You know,
right,
it's either rainy or sunny or foggy. I'm worried we're going to have the six phrases of Washington, and that's all anyone's going to say from here on, like right direction, way forward,
yeah,
you know. That kind of stuff. I'm not too pleased with that situation.
I'm just going to tell you right now that I'm going to propose a radical new policy for this country, one that I think would cut to the heart of a lot of these political squabbles about who's running, who can vote, who's incompetent, who's incapacitated, who's not. And I think it would also add and inject an element of fun that's been lacking from American politics. I believe that whenever a senator, whenever any governmentally elected official, whenever an elected official in our government is incapacitated, he should be replaced for the interim by a chimpanzee. And the chimpanzee is just armed with a yes button and a no button. And whenever there's a vote, you just throw it to the chimpanzee. If he has to be the tiebreaker, bam, he hits one of the buttons. There you go. Some sort of rabid primate in a cage replaces any and all government officials who are incapacitated, not able to carry out their duties.
You know, I was actually chewing on that idea until you brought the cage out. I like the idea of a chimps just roaming the floor.
Okay, I will accept.
But this scene of, I would accept that as long if the chimp can roam the halls of Congress. But I will tell you this: the chimp has to be wearing a suit and a tie.
Right.
He has to be wearing a suit and a tie, and he has to be equipped with one of those little clown cars that they train the chimps to operate in the circus.
Right, with some flashing light, preferably.
Fantastic. I'm telling you. And then you could spin it off into a sitcom and a reality channel and a per-month fee website. Genius. Excellent. All right. Well, I think we've taken this childishness about as far as we can today. Lisa Goddard.
I think it's good.
Hey, by the way, we're speaking to Brian Blank later on.
Oh, you're kidding. Wow. How did you work that? I can't even speak to Brian Blank.
I can't really take any credit for it. I think it was Sarah Dillon who finally... What was that fable about the guy who hits the stone and then the hammer? And then there's some fable somewhere. But the point is that Sarah nagged Richard Weibra about this enough. And my next move, by the way, was to put him on the air and demand to know why we couldn't speak to Brian Blank.
Oh, nice. I like it.
So, I love Richard.
He is the easiest going guy. That's right.
I was really ready to take it to the mattresses, but now we don't have to. So
did he tell you that he was going to be on the Travel Channel?
Yeah, how about that? That's the greatest thing. Did you guys tell your listeners know about this?
Yeah, that he's doing some show with his family.
Yeah, that he was chosen for Trip of a Lifetime because he would send in a proposal what it would be, and he apparently has roots to, like, the indigenous Maori, I think, of New Zealand. And he said, I'd really like to go and visit the village that, you know, I guess his grandfather or great-grandfather came from. I've never been there. And so, of course, they jumped at it. Oh, indigenous people, this is great. This guy from Atlanta wants to go check it out.
Fantastic.
And they got this, you know, five-star treatment the whole way. They said it was amazing.
When is that? Do we know when that's going
to
air?
I don't know when that is. I need to find out.
I think it's next Tuesday,
right.
I believe.
It
might be Christmas or the
up.
Day after Christmas.
You know, the CNN is just a Pandora's box of ever-unfolding majesty and surprise.
That's right. Yeah, my kung fu lessons, by the way, are coming along.
Really? Now, I don't wish for this to sound crass in any way, but really, if at some point you get a pose of yourself, like, in your kung fu garb, maybe where you're doing, like, the power fist, like, at the camera, you know what I mean? Like a first-person perspective or second-person perspective, kind of a, like, right at the lens.
Right.
And that ought to be your official CNN press photo, for one thing.
That would be cool. That'd be a lot cooler than the one I have now.
Now, let me ask you about this headshot that you use for CNN now. There's nothing wrong with it, but may I ask how old that picture is, when that was taken?
Yeah, that is 1 year old.
Okay, which is good. I just want to make sure.
It looks like I'm a Charlie's Angels reject.
No. Rick Emerson wasn't saying anything bad about it, but Rick Emerson is aware.
Stop talking about yourself in the third person.
Yeah, as should I.
No, I'm just saying.
No, Lisa, you're fine. Rick just starts, and he'll never stop.
Here's the thing about it, though. There are, and it does seem to exist within the sort of CBS, Westwood
One. Are you asking Lisa for pictures of herself?
I'm not. I'm saying you got...
Where are you going?
No, now listen. Don't try to paint me as a stalker. What I'm saying is this. I'm saying you have to be careful about this because I know how some of these companies operate. Especially anybody even tangentially associated with Westwood One, you got to be careful because they will use the same press photo for you for like 30 years and it doesn't matter. I can't even tell you. If you really want to be amused, look at the press photo that they still send out for Don Imus. Imus, I swear to God, in that photo, he's about 22 years of age. He has no wrinkles, all his hair. He is wearing a cape, and he has rippling chest muscles. Now, I like Don Imus. I really do, and I like Imus's show. It should be said, however, though, that if you watch Imus on MSNBC, he looks like the skeleton of a drag queen. I mean, it really has to be said. So maybe it can be argued that using, at some point an older headshot is a good idea. But you got to watch that company. They never update any of their press materials there. So just word to the wise.
Well, I guess we're distributed by Westwood One. I don't know all these details.
That is the deal.
The contract's up for negotiation, so who knows?
And we'll see. There you go. So I'm telling you, man, as soon as you get like a photo of you breaking something heavy with one of your hands.
That's what I needed.
Yeah,
I don't know if I'm going to learn that in this type of kung fu, though. I don't think they do that.
Well,
I'll see if I can change 2,000 years of knowledge, though.
If for entertainment value, if nothing else. All right, Lisa Goddard, enjoy the rest of your day. We will talk to you soon.
All right, see ya.
Thank you. There you go. Lisa Goddard, CNN radio correspondent on the Hill.
I wasn't trying to insinuate you were creepy.
No, that's how it came off. Rick, are you just trying to get Lisa to send you photographs of herself? What is the non-creepy interpretation of that?
I don't, you were asking her if she looked like her pictures on the internet, right?
That's not what I said. That's not what I asked. That is a drastic revision of the text.
Okay, Rick Emerson.
Oh, I just wanted to know if they were recent photos, because again, because it's like Lycus. You know, they sent out that photo of Lycus, and his photo now is like much better. The way he looks now, because he's got the sunglasses, he's got like the kind of the Van Dyke, the stubble, which kind of works for him. But they were sending out that photo for a long time where it's like it was really like a very, very carefully staged photograph. It just didn't look very good. And the same thing with Imus, man. Imus was the worst. Don and Mike, the same thing. Those photos they sent out of Don and Mike, they're from like 1989. I can't, and by the way, I'm not exempting myself from this. You go to rickemerson.com, you look at those, you go to the gallery section. The one at the top of the page, the banner photo of me, is actually not too bad. That's a good photo taken by Jason Crump. You look on the inside, and there's like one of me leaning against the wall, and my hair's all pointy for some reason. And it's just like, it's the worst photo that's ever been taken. And that's the one that they use on all of the press materials. Every single piece of information they send it. Would you like to advertise with this mongoloid host we have in middays? Please look at this photo now. And it makes me look like I just came off the short bus. We should break. It's like 56.
Okay, crazy.
I didn't mean short bus, by the way. They refer to the book. I didn't mean came. I meant Asian. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. We will take a break. We'll come back with Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. Later on, Brian Blank. Won't go anywhere.